Good afternoon, everybody. My name's Ray. I'm an addict. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've got one of them meds like me, my head's saying, pop one of them balloons. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for asking me to come. A pleasure. You know, I come from the school that whenever you're asked to do service, it's a privilege. It should never be a chore. And that's how it is for me today. You know, it's a privilege to be here. You know, I was looking forward to coming. I live quite some distance away, so it was a nightmare getting here, as there was an accident at Dartford Tunnel and whatever else. But, you know, I phoned James and said, look, I might be 5 minutes late and just leave it to the powers that be, and I managed to get here. I never script anything. So I don't believe in that, you know, I don't come from that school, because over the years I've been here, I've met a lot of chosen ones and the people who can talk the talk. But when it comes to walking the walk, you know, I'm of the school that says, don't tell me, show me. You know, that fundamental of this program, that spiritual principle of attraction rather than promotion, you know. I suffer from the disease of addiction. You know, and it's not a disease that can be treated by just throwing phrases at it, you know. And I say this to people, and I don't preach to anyone. I don't believe that's what this program's about. But I know from experience, and I've been one of them people in the past, and I know many people are, if you read something enough, like our wonderful big book, you may start sounding like that big book, but it doesn't mean you're well. It really doesn't. Although everything in our big book has been written so beautifully with the experience of people that came before us and everything else, they were humble enough to say, we realise we know only a little, more will be revealed. And that comes with experience. And I think, you know, if you're new in this program, and anyone who's new here or anyone who's struggling, and we can all struggle no matter how long we've been here, you know, I think sometimes the message that we can put out sometimes that just go and help someone else all the time is actually quite dangerous. The wise amongst us will say, always get out of the sea before you save someone from drowning, you know. And I think that's highlighted in the book beautifully when it says you can't transmit what you haven't got. And it doesn't matter how long we've been here. You know, I've been fortunate enough to see many people get well. And I've been fortunate enough to see many people think they're well. You know, and I've seen many, many success stories, and I've also seen many, many tragedies, you know, where people have lost the ability to tell people they're in trouble or they need help. You know, they've lost the ability to recognise that they can, at times, even in long-term sobriety, be quite spiritually sick, you know. And without being morbid, I'll say this in just a nutshell. I mean, it was a few years ago, I knew somebody in this fellowship who was quite, you know, one of them people who we sort of looked up to, and he was struggling with life, as we do sometimes. And I said to him, where are you at with your higher power? And his answer was, deep down inside every man, woman and child is a fundamental idea of God. And I looked at him and I knew he was in trouble. And less than a week later, he was dead. Because we sometimes just throw that message out that yes, we are a solution-based program, and we're about rebuilding lives, not decimating them. But we have to be real, we have to be honest. And sobriety for me is about emotional maturity, growing up emotionally. It's about going through the experiences. But most importantly, it's about learning to listen. You know, anything you hear from me, the way this program works, if you hear any one snippet of wisdom from me, and if you do, none of it's from me. It's all just passed about. That's how it works. That's how this program works. And that's why Bill W. wrote a book after the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous called Pass It On. Pass It On. You know, and bit about my own story. You know, my story is my story, and I don't come from a place of ego or anything like that, because we can fall into that trap sometimes, like where you know, we can stand up here and say and really compound how bad our story was to overqualify, and it's like ego in reverse. It's like, if I can show you how bad I was and now show you how good I am, look at me, I'm the chosen one, I'm floating on the clouds. But you know, it's not like that. Our stories are our stories. It doesn't matter how far down the scale we've gone, how low, whatever, you know, recovery is possible for everyone as soon as we stop trying to justify our using. But we have to reach that point. My own story is that, you know, I spent 16 years of my life behind bars in prison. You know, that's where my illness took me, you know. And it took me there through the classic textbook cycle of addiction, really. You know, no, I don't blame anyone, but I grew up in a tough South London housing estate. There wasn't a lot of options for us. You know, I didn't come from the best of upbringings without throwing mud. You know, I had an alcoholic father. There was no bank of mum and dad, and there was no bank of mum and dad emotionally. And I came out of childhood actually quite damaged and quite scarred. But at some point in childhood, I'd lost any sort of ability to identify with any feeling or emotion, and I certainly couldn't tell you how I felt. You know, there's a saying, you know, if someone can't tell you how they feel, they'll show you how they feel. And that was pretty much how it was for me. You know, I acted out from a young age. And from about the age of 18, 19, I started to suffer with mental health problems. But I didn't know what it was. You know, I used to suffer from terrible anxiety and panic attacks. You know, I used to leave the house and all of a sudden I'd feel like an overwhelming sea of panic come over me, and I'd just want to run home, you know. And it was a crippling, crippling place to be as a young man. And by this time, I'd already found recreational drugs, you know, cannabis and alcohol and all these sort of things. Yes, they'd done something for me. And I'm one of these people that Bill W. referred to so beautifully, anyone who knows anything about the history of our program, as a strange alcoholic. You know, that's how we referred to the early addicts in program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He called us strange alcoholics. You know, I drank and it done nothing for me. Done nothing for me. I'm not one of these who say the moment I had a drink, I felt, oh, absolutely wonderful, and I had this lovely feeling in my throat. I didn't. The first time I drank, I didn't like the taste, I didn't like the effect, but I still woke up on the floor in a pool of my own sick and said, I'll never do that again. But I did, you know. It was like from the moment I put a mood altering substance in my body, it didn't matter what it was, it done something to me. And I akin it to, this is the best way I can describe addiction. It's living in a body that wants to survive, but with a mind that wants to kill you. That's the best way I can describe it in a nutshell, to keep it simple. And from the moment I started using mood-altering substances, I had a problem. You know, there was no recreational progression where I was sort of like having fun and everything else. It was like clear acts of desperation from a young age. You know, I didn't have money. I didn't know what I wanted to do in life. I felt like I'd been dropped from a spaceship. I had no sense of direction, no self-worth, no self-esteem. And this is with hindsight, I look back and say this stuff, you know. You know, I was not, I've heard people that are quite emotionally literate say it so wonderfully that I hated myself. Well, I didn't know what I felt. I didn't know what I felt. But looking back and what I'd done to myself and the situations I was putting myself in, it was clear I didn't have a high opinion of myself, you know, it was clear. And yeah. So from a young age, you know, I was off and running. And for me, that involved committing crime. And the crimes got more and more desperate as time went on, you know. And I was just propelled into that way of life, you know. I did get involved in some quite serious organised crime. And as a result, I received a very long prison sentence, you know, and like I say, ended up spending a lot of years in prison, which was tough, you know. But this message, this is why listening to that gentleman who just spoke so eloquently about P&I and H&I and stuff like that, you know, I applaud anyone who gets involved in that stuff, because that's how the message was carried to me. You know, I was very fortunate. When I first came into this wonderful fellowship, you know, it wasn't very big. You know, there was only four CA meetings in Great Britain at the time. There was four, we had four meetings. And I came through a treatment centre with one of the founders of CA in this country, who had a treatment centre in Bournemouth. And we started the fifth meeting of Cocaine Anonymous. And we lost the venue because someone set fire to the bin. But yeah, we started the fifth meeting. And that was one of the times. And a lot of them people are still about today, you know, which is wonderful. You know, I had to go in and out a few times, because some of us do. Let's be real, you know. I'm certainly not one of these members of this fellowship that shoots the wounded. The reality of it is some people relapse. No one ever needs to, but some people do, and some people come back. That's the nature of addiction, you know, let's be real, let's be honest, you know. And when I was a newcomer, I wasn't as smart as a lot of the newcomers that I meet nowadays, you know. They're quite smart and quite astute, you know. I should have been followed around by the Benny Hill music, you know. when I was a newcomer, you know, all the things that my sponsor said, don't do, you know. Go to meetings, don't sit at the back of the room. No offence to anyone who is, but don't sit at the back of the room and I'll be off and running. You know, stay out of relationships, you know. And the end results would be the same, because I knew better, or the rules didn't apply to me, or I worked the famous three-step program. I'm fucked, I'm sorry, how can I help you, you know? And in amongst all that, it was more important to go to a meeting, see if there's anyone there who I like, and go to the gym, get back to work, get a few quid, get a nice car, and all these things that we believe will fix us. Don't. And in my experience, you know, we can do that stuff very quickly. You know, we're amazing people. I'm yet to meet a stupid addict. In 24 years of coming to this fellowship, I'm yet to meet a stupid addict. We can achieve that stuff very quickly. And we can also build up loads of lovely things to take to cash converters when it gets real. And it does, if our focus is not honest and pure, you know. This program started to work for me when I said, you know what, I need to do this and give myself one more chance. I knew how deeply in trouble I was, you know. And, you know, I started to lay aside what I believed I knew, you know, what I thought I knew, which was very little, very little. It's very, very hard to draft any new ideas onto a closed mind. It's like a parachute. It works better when it's open. And that's why they say honesty, open-mindedness and willingness. And when I was able to get honest, I mean really be honest, and say, my name is Ray and I am an addict, and internalise that, then this program and everything that's written and everything that we talk about started to make sense, because it started to make sense to me, and how it meant, what it meant for me, not what it meant for you. Because people with low self-esteems, like us, when we come in, we tend to absorb this information and just concentrate on passing it out, like keep giving it away, and we're told that message, you must pass it on, you must give it away to keep it, and all this stuff. Of course, I agree with all that. But once we've internalised it and learned to practice it in our own lives, then we start to reap the rewards and the transformation happens, you know. There's never been any flashing light for me in terms of a spiritual awakening. I've never had an experience where I can say the angels were there in front of me or whatever. But I look at life experiences and the things that have happened to me in the many years that I've been clean. And I can only say it exactly how it said in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. You know, and they've been many. They've been many. You know, I've witnessed suicide in recovery. I found, you know, I used to be a boxer in amongst all my madness. One of my old corner men committed suicide. You know, I had to cut him down and try to save his life, you know. I didn't use. There's always an excuse, never a reason. I did not use, and the urge was not there to use. You know, that's pretty amazing. You know, recently, I witnessed a horrific car crash. Oh, it sounds quite morbid. And I witnessed a horrific car crash on my way home. I live out in a place called West Kings down in Kent, and a woman had basically rolled her car. And she was dying upside down in her car. You know, car was... petrol all over it, and myself and another motorist at up near Brands Hatch, I was able to climb in the car with her and hold her hand so she wasn't alone. And I stayed with her for 45 minutes till the emergency services got there. You know, it took them 45 minutes, mind you, but when they got there, you know, it's just situations like that. And I came away from that and I sort of went, wow. You know, how did I instinctively know how to handle that situation so that woman was alone? That's not for me to... I'm not just going to stand here and go, look at me, I'm... You know, because I believe those who pray in public have received their reward. But something came to me afterwards and said, sometimes we have a habit of being in the wrong place at the right time when we're in recovery and we walk this path. And that power that is within us that comes from practicing the 12 steps of this program works for us, you know. They call them God instances, don't they, the wisest in the program. That's what the old wise old-timers will say. That we seem to find ourselves sometimes in situations, and it's only afterwards when we sort of look at what that situation was, we see how far we've come. It's like swimming away from the shore, isn't it? When you look back, you sort of see how far you've come. That's how it is for me. And that's the stuff that I value today, not the material world. Means very little. It really does. It means very little. And I've been through them phases. I've been through them phases of wanting to have, like, flash cars and all this rubbish, you know. I've done that. I've done that stuff. A few years ago, I went and bought myself a really lovely flash car. And I felt such a prick driving it. Excuse my language. I felt like a prick. I thought, why did I do this? What was it about? What was going on for me? And that's not to detract from anyone and say it's not okay to have nice things. It is. You know, I come from the school in this illness. I had fuck all. I had nothing. I couldn't even get together to feed myself. I had a carrier bag when I came out of prison with a few pairs of socks in them. And I think some of them had holes in, you know. It's okay to have nice things. You work hard for them. As long as our motives are pure and it's okay. And it's not all about... putting up that defence again, that pretence to the world that we're in some way better or whatever. And I just felt like such an idiot driving it that I just used to leave it up you know, I've got a scaffold company. I used to leave it in my yard. I never ever drove it. I never drove it. Crazy. And I ended up selling it. I basically gave it away. I sold it to someone. He turned up and I see in his eyes, it was like, oh, really? And I thought, you know what? It'll go to a good home, and I let him take it. And when it went, you know the relief I felt? I was like, that's one bit of dickhead gone. a little bit of ego dropped, and I got rid of that stuff. It's not important. It's not important, you know. And I come from that place, you know, where I've become quite a philanthropist, and that's a nice place to be. From someone who couldn't get it together to have a life or earn a penny or anything, or didn't know what he wanted to do in life or nothing, you know, this stuff becomes revealed to us. Alfred Hitchcock said it beautifully. All opportunity in life happens by accident. All we can be is in the best place physically, spiritually, and emotionally should that accident arise. That sounds a lot to take in, doesn't it? But what that means is that when we are awake, we don't miss it. Whereas when we was asleep using drugs and drinking, and we miss everything that's going on around us. We miss it all. And we put all our love into the wrong places, and we care about those that don't care about us. We place ourselves in situations to get hurt, used, abused. You know, we play our part. You know, when we are awake, we become more attractive. We choose our company more wisely. We make better decisions. That's not to say we don't make mistakes, because we do. And I make them. But we become a little bit better at admitting our wrongs. We become a little bit better at making amends and all this stuff. We learn to practice this stuff. It really is quite simple. Step 1, 2, 3, give up. Step 4 to 9, clean up. Step 10, 11, 12, live up. That's it. It's not rocket science. We really try to complicate it. And the restoration to sanity, you know, we've had the advent of treatment centres and the wonderful work they do. I'm not knocking them. But let's get rid of the terminology that they use, because that's not what Bill, that's not what Bob, that's not what the early members taught. And at no place did we ever say insanity means making the same mistakes and expecting different results. That's not the sanity they spoke of. The insanity that they spoke about was believing the lie. And you may hear that said. And that's like deep denial. And as we go through this journey, we realise just how much that horrible thread affects our lives and how we believe the lie. And that lie is not always about using. It can be about this relationship's right for you, or this decision's right for you, or whatever. And it's not to say we don't make mistakes, but we tend to believe a lie. That's why there's a saying in AA meetings, says think, think, think. And it's about believing the lie. That's the insanity, you know. We stop believing the lie. They say the journey from here to here is the longest journey you'll ever make. And in an addiction, I went through here, because they say the illness is centered in the mind. And we feel like we're being driven by something outside of our control, the crazy head or whatever else. In recovery, as long as we stay connected, we tend to be driven more by this. And it's more trustworthy, you know. That's been my experience. The transformation in me has been profound. Been profound. And again, I don't say this stuff for ego. It's my story, you know. I ended up in a place, and those who know me will know this is true. I ended up in a high security category A prison in a special unit because of my behaviour, where I used to go psychotic in my using and attack people and attack prison officers and whatever else. And where it took me was in a high security special unit with two psychiatrists reassessing me, and one psychiatrist tapping a table on the pen, saying a signature from me and a signature for him, and you're going to Broadmoor. You know, that's where this illness took me. That sounds like, wow. So today, being a successful businessman, being somebody with multiple years clean, being a best-selling author, you know, I work for two TV companies, I'm a producer at the minute, and I don't even know what a producer is. I don't, but I've become a producer by default. You know, I had no intentions of that stuff. You know, I'm filming a series for TV at the minute with some producers, and because I'm a senior advisor on it about different aspects of the prison system and whatever else, I've been made a producer. So how did that happen? No, these are the things that can happen to us. We never know where this program's going to take us. We never know where life's going to take us. We really don't. If you'd have told me that stuff a few years ago, I would have looked at you like you was mad. Like you was mad, you know. I've had some wonderful experiences in this program. I suppose some of you probably know Chris Raymer. Does anyone here think they are Chris Raymer? Sorry. But Chris is a wonderful man, and I was fortunate enough that when I was in that serving that long sentence, I was sponsored by someone in his program who was sponsored by him and whatever else. And I used to write to Chris. And My sponsor sent me in the postcard of the tombstone at Winchester Cathedral, the old doggerel thing, and I sent it to Chris, and I said to Chris, one day, Chris, I will come up to you at a convention and shake your hand for all you've done for me. Because he used to send me in books, literature, him and Miles both used to write to me and whatever else. And at the 2012 convention of Cocaine Anonymous at Birmingham, I went up to Chris after he'd done his main share, and I looked at him and I said, Chris, thank you for all you've done for me when I was in prison. And he almost fell over and he started crying. I said, well, what's the matter, Chris? And he said, I have the card that I sent him. He's got a shrine in his house of like different things, different letters and things that he's had from people he's worked with over the years and whatever. And he said, it was on my shrine. And he said, and I knew one day you'd come up to me at a convention. And I did, you know. That's the sort of things that can happen, you know. It means something, you know. It means something. It's not my doing. And I hope there's a message in that, you know. Anyone who's struggling, please, you know, say to someone, be honest, you know. Sobriety is about quality, not quantity. And just because someone may have multiple years, they can be as sick as the newcomer at times. It goes like that. It's peaks and troughs recovery. If we could be well every day, we probably don't have this illness. You know what I mean? It is peaks and troughs. And it's not always easy, but it's about hanging on. And I say, you know, we get well with experience and we get well from the mistakes we make. And sometimes we don't need to make them mistakes because the pain and the prices we pay can be quite severe. You know, I paid them prices for not listening. But if we do listen and try something different might happen. You know, and that's been my experience. And with that, I think, is that 35 minutes? Is that 27? Oh, wow. 8 more minutes to talk about my favourite subject, me. I'm joking. You know, this programme is fantastic. It works if we work it. I've been down all them other roads. Therapy. I've been to seeing a therapist a few times. I'm not knocking anyone who works in the field. But the reality of it is, in my own experience, someone who's riddled with this illness, who's been riddled with the malady, even in recovery, in early recovery, and in long-term recovery, what works is this. And when I start to look elsewhere and think, oh, there has to be something deeper, there has to be another solution, oh, I need outside help, I need to go for counselling and all this stuff, I'm not knocking all this stuff. But the reality of it is, I'm probably not doing enough of this. Or my relationship with a higher power. Because at the end of the day, belief is not enough. Faith comes from practice. You know, say faith without works is dead. And we can, and you know, I can forget that sometimes. And it can be it's not this big issue, faith, you know. I've had it described to me so wonderfully, and I think this is a great way to describe faith. You know, if you're on a double-decker bus and you're sat upstairs and you're going downhill, you've got great faith in that bus driver, haven't you? And you can't see him. How do you know he didn't get off at the stop before? That's like faith for me. It's like I don't have to explain it. And you'll find the people who have faith don't explain it. You know, we quit trying to explain it and we quit trying to play God. And I don't try and force anyone's beliefs on anyone. You know, you choose your own concept of God, choose your own concept of an higher power. And that's what the 12 steps is about. It's about us finding our own concept of a God of our own understanding. Because I remember that, especially in service work, that we have no right to preach to anyone. We really don't. we never know what someone's experiences are with that stuff. You know, I've met people in this program who have a wonderful, deep spiritual belief when they get here, but yet they still have this illness. It's about our relationship with that higher power, and that's a personal thing, isn't it? I say it, and I've had it described to me, you know, we would not be here had Abby Thatcher said to Bill W., you must believe in my God. That's not what he said. He said, why don't you choose your own concept of God? However immature that is, however, whatever that is, that's what he said, you know. And that is the fundamentals of this program. The spiritual principles, the real simple stuff. The real simple stuff, you know. Choose your own concept of God and work towards a relationship with that power. And that seems like a daunting task. But if I can do it, Jesus, anyone can do it. Anyone can do it. Anyone can do it. And it really is the most important thing in life. Because, you know, I've come to that conclusion now I'm in my 50s now, and we're only here for a short period of time, and we're going to leave everything behind, aren't we? So, you know, freedom from active addiction for me is all about having a relationship with an higher power. All about that, you know. And witnessing and experiencing that power in your own life. And when I deal with people today, and I deal with some pretty big people in the business and commerce world, you know, I'm very fortunate. I've got some quite big scaffold contracts, and I deal with some pretty big people. Because my anonymity's been blown, as it were, because I've done quite a lot of media work, and by virtue of being an author and whatever else, is people know my past, but they look at me and they don't believe my past. You know, it's like people will be more aware of the transformation than we are. That's what it says about spiritual awakening, doesn't it? It's like the transformation has been so profound that people don't believe my past. But they don't need to. They don't need to. But for me, it is my greatest asset, and that's why I do it. That's why I speak out and do other stuff beyond this fellowship. Because what's more important is what we do beyond this, you know, carrying these principles in all our affairs. And we learn to do that of experience, you know. The things that used to sit right with me don't sit right with me today. You know, I try to do things the best I can. Don't always get it right, but the results tend to be better when I try to stick close to the principles of this program. I don't want to ramble on. I think I've covered so much, really. You know, and I don't want to start going into the realms of preaching or self or ego or whatever. You will have your own experience with this stuff. I'm sure there's plenty of people here far more experienced than I am and have a lot more knowledge than me, you know. But I asked an old timer once, you know, first time I saw someone who was like 30 year clean or something when I was. And I said, how do you become an old-timer? He said, it really is quite simple. Don't use and don't die. And that's it, really, isn't it? In a nutshell. And that is the solution of this program. Thank you for letting me share. Thank you.